I want to start with a story I usually tell over at the Mavet Shemesh Shabbaton. This year, I actually missed it. The Shabbaton that is. You were there, I missed it. I saw the story to explain exactly, who is sitting in the room right now with us. Who are you sitting next to? Who's sitting in front of you and behind you? About 10, 11, 12 years ago. It was 12 years ago. So I had moved my family from America, from Florida to Israel. We've been here about 3 years already, 3-4 years. And at that time we had 2 sets of twins, we had 4 children. And we obviously, as the custom is in many Jewish homes, is that the mother lights candles per child in the family, per person, including the adults as well. Six candles we lit in our family. Placed in the same place every single Shabbos. It would happen to be very often I would come home from shul. My wife, and I'd look at the candles, and there'd be one or two that went out. My wife would have this, like, forlorn, this sad face, a candle went out. My wife's very spiritual, and each person is like a candle, and what does that mean for us? And it really means, because the air conditioner was blowing on it usually, which is why it went out, but it doesn't really matter. The reason behind it, that was a very regular event that happened on Friday night in my family. There was one Friday night, it was approximately this time of year, right after the Ben Hazman of Pesach. We're going back. My wife also is involved in a seminary. She runs a seminary. I teach in the yeshiva. We know the post-Pesach blues, you might be calling it. We'll call it now the Kaizman baby attitude. And we walk into the house on Friday night, and I see my wife, and she's got that face on. I look to the candles, and I see immediately 2 of them are out. And she's like, oh, and I'm like, it's just, got to move them for the air conditioning. It's not that big of a deal. Whatever. We go, that night, usual, I make Kiddush, my custom, many Jews didn't do this as well. What do you say? You look at your candles, and I notice again, there were 2 candles that were out. Next morning, I go get dressed in the morning, I'm getting ready for shul, it's about a little before 8 o'clock, the meeting starts at 8 o'clock, and I walk downstairs with my clothes on and get my tie on, and I look at the candles, and there are 2 candles that are lit. Now, I'm not a big Kabbalist, nor do I believe in hocus pocus type of things, but I can tell you that I've grounded person, and the candles were lit. I go to the right, I said, you're not going to believe this. I said, come with me. She walked downstairs, and I pointed to the candles, and she's like, is there a robber in the house? And I'm like, lit our Shabbos candles for us? Like, why would they do that? And she's like, what is going on here? We were both like very bothered by it. So I said, I'm gonna call, even though I'm not a Kabbalist, we have connections to people who feel, do study and dabble in those areas. I'm going to ask someone later on what he makes of that event. So after I was over, I called one of our friendly neighborhood Kabbalists, and I asked him. He goes, yeah, this happens all the time. But so yeah, these are things, I get stories like this all the time. So I wasn't Kabbalist then. And I actually, that week, I thought about it a lot, and I have a mahalach I want to share with you at the very end of today's talk. As Rabbi Olson just mentioned to you, there are a lot of yoms on the horizon. This is not going to be a political conversation. You can ask the rabbi if they want to give you their political views on it. I'm not going to give my political views on it. But a lot of yoms are coming up. We have Yom HaZikaron, we have Yom HaAtzmaut. There's other yoms. There's a lot of Omer, Yom Yerushalayim, a lot around the horizon from now. How do we as Jews, with putting politics aside, celebrate events like these? Again, I'm not talking about Tachanun or Halala. Just how do we look at these moments and these opportunities that are around us, especially being in Eretz Yisrael? So Yom HaZikaron, I'll tell you what I think about whenever I go to the Har Herzl. I think about, I look around me. Like, I usually don't go with the crew. I usually try to go myself a little bit. And just like take it in. You're going to see people there that you think would be grandmothers, mourning Nebuch for their grandchild. Just now, for example, yesterday from Shalavim, a boy from Shalavim, just Nebuch was killed buried yesterday in Har Herzl. Freshly, dug grave for a boy from Shalavim who was killed, and a boy close to your age, who died in a tank accident. I teach at nighttime to adults. So his best friend was one of my Alabafim's, it was my last son. They were best friends. He spoke at the Levi. So certainly you can imagine there's a lot of people there that are mourning. But if you look at the gravestone that people are hovering around, and you'll notice it says on it it's in Hebrew dates, but it'll be like 1967. And the woman wasn't a grandmother, it was like her husband, who she still to this day is pained over having lost. And you can look around you and see people who are having a hard time. I'll tell you a very strange custom that I heard one of my former students in Florida, actually, who himself was in the Army. So he's very, very close friends with a person named Michael Levine, who was a famous, maybe the first Chayal Bodeh who had lost his life in the Army. His custom on Yom HaZikaron was to play ball in Gan Soccer and have a barbecue. That was not Yom HaZikaron custom. Why? Because Michael Levine, before he was killed, he was one of the guys that did it, so they continue the custom afterwards for his memory. Okay, I'm not going to get involved with I think that's normal or not normal. It doesn't really matter. There is no prescribed rule that we have how to celebrate or commemorate these days. But really, whatever it is that you think you should be doing in these days, that's what happens on Yom HaZikaron. Yom HaTzmut is the next day. Again, no political views over here. We live in Eretz Yisrael. We are zochet to have a place where we can go and feel free to be Jewish. You walk the streets in your talis and Shabbos without any fear people look at you in a strange way whatsoever. You like the government. It doesn't really matter at this point in time. You should be makir tov to Kadosh Baruch Hu. You mock your toe, whether you don't do through halal, do through learning Torah, do through whatever, through walking through the footsteps of our ancestors who captured the old city or fought in the war and got us a country, whatever it is you want to do, but it should be something that is heartfelt to you. It should be something you're mocking those Kadosh Baruch Hu, which is every single day, really, mocking those Kadosh Baruch Hu, every day. And certainly on a day when the rest of the country around us is doing it, we should realize this is a very special opportunity we have to be here in Israel. It's something that we didn't have, 71 years ago. We didn't have opportunities like this. There's a very unique chance that we should make sure we spend that day in a proper fashion as well. Now there is, I mentioned before, there is no prescribed way to celebrate or commemorate these moments in time. What we do have is we have Chazal. Chazal will tell us, and I'll borrow from this week's Parsha, the second Parsha we have, Parsha Kedoshim. Kedoshim to you means when things aren't demanded of you, according to the Ramban. They're not demanded of you, but you act in a way that's befitting of a person who strives for greatness. That's the Ramban says, Al Torah, Kedosha means not that you don't speak Lashon Hara. That's not a Kadosh, that's a regular person who speaks Lashon Hara. A Kadosh is somebody who takes regular activities and he's Mekadosh them. He eats like a Kadosh. He acts in ways that aren't demanded, but that are full of Kedusha. That's what a person who's striving to be a Kadosh works on. And he brings down, he explains that the goal we have in mind is every action that we do should be with Hashem in our mind as well. So when I eat, well, how does Hashem want me, not only to make me brachas, how does Hashem want me to be eating right now? When I go on a trip or I play ball, how does Hashem want me to play ball right now? How does Hashem want me to walk around Yerushalayim? And what type of clothing? What should I be looking at? Again, not about anything that's usher, things that are mutter. What is the way that I carry myself to the highest level possible? That's how we prescribe to meet every single day. Kal v'chomer, Yom Zikaron, and Yom HaAtzmaut, and every other Yom that we have in our lives, to act as a Kadosh. When there is no prescribed way to live, the way to live is to do Kadoshim to you like the Ramban suggests. We should be constantly thinking about a Kadosh Baruch Hu in our lives with everything we make. Where are you going to dinner tonight? I don't know, where Kadosh Baruch Hu want me to go to dinner tonight? Maybe he doesn't care. Maybe he does care. Whatever he cares, I should do that. You might think it's strange to have in mind everything you do, Kadosh Baruch Hu, wherever you are in life. When you go to the bathroom, there's a way we're supposed to clean ourselves. Take a shower in order for us to wash ourselves. You'd imagine, give me some of my own dal amos. Let me have a little room to decide how I want to live my life. There's a basketball player named Doug Christie. If you ever heard him before, he went to Pepperdine. He was an old school player. That's why he played Sacramento Kings, the Lakers, a number of other places as well. He had a very strange custom. He had a strange custom that he had. Anyone know the custom? Anyone know it? Okay. You can watch, if you ever watch footage of him, it's not just a Hollywood, but like a 5-minute part of his game, he will go like this in the middle of the game. He's not like Black Power. He's putting his fist up in the air, putting it down every so often. And it's like sometimes people make a basket and they do it, but he like make a turnover and like he does it. What is he doing there? They're bothered by it. People ask him, "What are you doing?" So he said, "My wife goes to every single basketball game. She goes to every game we play him. She goes to every road trip they go on for obvious reasons. And I want to tell her. This guy's my baby." I want to tell her that I'm thinking about her. So at every point in the game, when I cross my mind, I give a little reminder. And she sees me in the middle of a basketball game in a playoff hunt. Not my wife. I want her to know I'm thinking about her also. So if a basketball player has no problem in the heat of his battle trying to tell his wife, "I'm thinking about you," so should we not remind ourselves that every moment in life we're thinking about our Creator? We shouldn't have a Kedoshim to you aspect and mindset? That whatever I do in life, the first question I ask myself is, what would God want from me right now? Not only is that the case when it comes to a basketball game, but the idea of a point exists also when it comes to Kadosh Baruch Hu. I tell a famous story. I don't know if it's famous or not, but I read it, so I guess it's famous. I saw it inside. The Vilna Gaon's wife and another woman in the community They had a. They were both Balei Tzedakah, and they, among other great things, they were big Tzedakadios. And they made a pact to each other that when the first one who dies, they'll go to the other one in a dream and tell him all about Shemayim. I want to hear what it's about. That made a pact. And the other woman died before the Vilna Gaon's wife did. And that night, as they promised, she came to her in a dream, and she said, I'm not allowed to share with you every detail that happens here, but I'll tell you one thing. I'll tell you one small thing. Remember there was a time, she said, that you and I were walking to try to find a woman that we were going to give stucca to? We're going to give her, we're going to hand out stucca to? She goes, yeah, of course I remember that. You remember you saw her first, and you pointed and said, there she is. And together we both gave her the stucca. Of course I remember that. So the woman says to Vilna Gaon's wife, I cannot describe for you how much scar you got for that point. I can't even tell you how much scar you got for that. It was just like, it was just an action. It was no, there's no mitzvah to point. Actually, your parents probably told you, you shouldn't point at people. But you saw first and you directed your energy, and that point that you gave, I can't describe to you what you get for that point. It's not a mitzvah. There's no obligation that you did. Kedoshim to you. You had an opportunity to do something, and you're the one who led us on there first. Kol kavod to you get reward for things like that even. There is no end when you act like a kadosh to how many things you have in your portfolio. Things you wouldn't imagine would be important. But they're kadosh. It's what a kadosh does. In Achrei Mos, beginning of this is far, we're going to have. So there's a mitzvah in the Torah, we all know it, hopefully you've heard of it before, it's called V'chai Bahem. The mitzvah means that you're obligated to live your life for the Torah and for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Rashi there says, let's talk about the world that's kulo chayim. When you leave the world, you get to be with HaKadosh Baruch Hu in a world that's kulo chayim, because it matters. That's what it refers to. But we know that's not really true, Rashi points out. We know V'chai Bahem actually refers to being alive. Because the Gemara in Sanhedrin brings down, V'chai Bahem is a mitzvah min HaTorah that you're not supposed to die except for the big three mitzvahs. Gilui Arayos, Shvichas Dam, and Avodah Zarah. You shouldn't die for any other mitzvah. V'chai Bahem, you're supposed to live through Torah values. There are exceptions when it's a time of persecution and things like that, not to get into deals right now. So Rav Schwab asked the Kasha, I understand, is it V'chai Bahem a mitzvah of the Olam Haba or this world? And he answers the following pshat, and it's very important to understand it. He says it doesn't matter, it's not different. In both discussions, it's all about what brings me close to Hashem. That's what it means. V'chai Bahem means you live a life when you're alive. You can walk around the world and be 120 years old and die directly on 120, and you never were alive. You were really an animal. You weren't a human. You followed your desires, did whatever everyone else in the world does, and you did the same thing. That's not called life. That's not V'chai Bahem. That's an animal who happens to be taking human form. V'chai Bahem means that you live every moment of your life with the ultimate goal, what brings me closer to God? It's the only question that you ask. It's the only question that you ask. You think it matters how much money you're going to make in the end? How fast you begin your job? How many beaches you frequented in the world? It doesn't. I'll tell you right now, you can sign me up in Shemayim. It doesn't matter at all. There's one thing that matters in the world only, in how close did you get to God? V'chai Bahem, how'd you live? And that life, by the way, is even beyond when you leave this world. Because chayim means what true life is about, which is connection to Ribbono Shel Olam. Says Rav Schwab, V'chai Bahem, to be alive, could also be in Shemayim, you're alive. You're alive dancing with your mitzvahs and Torah you learned in Shemayim. That's what V'chai Bahem means. Nothing other than that is chayim. You could be a dead man who's walking. The Chafetz Chaim said to Rav Schwab one time, he said, you know where you're going to be in 50 years, in 150 years from now? He said, with Ribbono Shel Olam in Shemayim. You know where you're going to be in 500 years from now? Ribbono Shel Olam in Shemayim. 1,000? Ribbono Shel Olam in Shemayim. Every time. When you leave the world, you'll be with Ribbono Shel Olam in Shemayim. Says the Chafetz Chaim from Rav Schwab, you can also be the Ribbono Shel Olam over here as well. Because we say every day, in Berachas HaTorah, we say this for sure, we say, Chai Olam Nata B'Sochenu. Hashem, you gave Chai Olam to us. What is Chai Olam? It doesn't mean Chai. It means Chai Olam. You gave us an unbelievable treat. You let us taste Olam Haba in this world. We say that when we bless the Torah, because the Torah is the only thing that is truly godly in this world. And we take those values and we add other things to that as well. We treat other things and make them godly as well. But Chai Olam, we thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu that you gave us Olam Haba while we're still here. We don't have to wait till Shemayim to get close to God. We have a chance to do it right now. We learn for that reason. We learn Torah for that reason. So we can find a way to connect to Ribbono Shel Olam while we're here. Why wait till we're dead? The psychological phenomenon called cognitive dissonance. You know what that is? Anybody know what that is? Psychology in high school, maybe? Some people know it. Okay, you've heard of it before. I'll read the dictionary, but the Wikipedia definition for cognitive dissonance, at least one of the definitions they had. A consequence of a person performing an action that contradicts personal ideals and values. I'll say it one more time. A consequence is what you feel like when you do certain things that go against your ideals and values. Picture the following scene. You were in yeshiva until Nissan. Maybe you went to Poland, maybe you didn't go to Poland, whatever happened to you afterwards. And then you have a break. And you have in your mind how you would hope to make it out of your break. You have in your mind your connection to the land of Israel. And then you go back. Or you're just off. And then you're kind of like in a no man's land. And you know what? Not so bad, right? It's pre-Kaitzman, baby. It's a break time. You feel good about things. It's great. And then you come back here, you're like, what am I doing? I can't. I was thinking about trying to bet you. Are you kidding me? You can't. So you know why? Because it's called cognitive dissonance. It's when your actions that you do right now are not in sync with your mindset. You have to change your mindset. Because if you want to be serious about who you are, then you can't allow yourself to have the fun that maybe you think is so much fun in the world. You can't allow it anymore. So something's got to change. So what's easier? Change my actions or not want that anymore? I hope everyone knows of Aesop and his fables that he used to write. So he wrote one called The Fox and the Grapes. And there he describes it was this fox who wanted to have these high-hanging grapes. And he tried and he worked and he tried and he could never reach them. And he said, you know, he said in the end, he said, they're probably spoiled anyways. They're not so tasty. He walked away feeling like, who needs them? We walk through a world where we are in a state of natural, constant cognitive dissonance. Because maybe you heard a shiur one time. Or maybe you had a week of davening that you never felt before in your life. And you so wanted this to work out for yourself. But you know what? Life gets complicated. There's so much awaiting us at home. And I have to fight with my parents to come back. Or I have to work hard here when I'm so tired and jet lagging. Why? I'd just rather not do it. But I can't because I know what's right. So you know what? Maybe it's not right. Maybe it's not so important. Hey, I don't like it anyways. So somebody else. You go to sleep at night afterwards and you feel much better. And you think, ugh, what was I thinking? There was some like bug in my head. Those rabbis, they almost got me. I almost became what they call a flip. Thank God I saw through that. And you go the rest of your life like a regular average Joe. And you live like a dead man. Maybe you go to shuls. You do so because it's part of a process that you grew up in. But there's no passion left. I've seen people come back from a few weeks only who davened with mamash so much kavod beforehand. I've seen them now. They're still davening kol kavod. It's a third of the amount of time they used to spend on it. A third. There's no eyes closed. Maybe you should ask me, why am I looking at them? That's a good question. That's something I have to answer to mine one day myself. I look at my children also when they daven. Look at my children. I want to see how they're doing. Well, explain that. What happened? What happened 3 weeks ago? What happened is very simple. It's called cognitive dissonance. I'm able to live my life in a way that I'm not bothered at nighttime. I continue my actions I wanted to do beforehand. Is it a big deal if we give ourselves the time to chill right now? Does it matter? Why can't I have a this? Why can't I have that? Why can't I have that? Right? It's almost over anyways. So, listen very close. We have to read to you right now. The Pesach of the Rebbe has the following line. Quotes from Yeshayahu, Kikarem Hashem, Tzvakot, Beis Yisrael, V'ish Yehuda Natash Ashuav. That every single person in Israel is a sapling of God. Kol Beis Yisrael, Kikarem Shal Hashemu. V'ish Yisrael HaPrati, Eitz Yakar, Hush Hashem Yishtashebo, Imrak Olech B'darko. Hashem is just waiting, hoping that you will go in His way. He's delighting over you. Derech HaTorah. What does it mean, His way? The way of the Torah. This is line over here. V'gam atad na'ar Yisrael. You young men in this room over here. You're also so reikatan. You're a little sapling right now. Every person in this room was planted by God in this world as a Jew right now in Yeshiva's Torah Shraka. K'shanu medar from atay lechem. I'm speaking to you right now. It's the piece of the Rebbe. In on yodim and me medarim. I don't know who I'm talking to. I don't know who in this room here is going to be the next Gadol Ador. A rabbi of your community, a leader of your family.
I don't know who I'm talking to, but listen to this line over here. He says, "Va'af ata lo teida mi ata," but you also don't know. You have no idea who you are. What's going to happen if you give yourself a chance? What would you turn into? If you tried your hardest, what could become of you? You have no idea. I don't know. But friends, neither do you. And he goes on to examples. Maybe you'll be the Gaon, where everyone will know who you are. Famous. Maybe not. Maybe you'll be just a very wealthy guy who learns all the time as much as he can. And everyone will say about you, "Halavai, my children should be like you are." We don't know who's who. Everyone's different. But in the day, though, because Baruch Hu is going to look at you and be like, "What happened to my tree? What happened to the sap that I put there? Why did it not turn into fruit?" I'll tell you one thing I do know. Every one of you will be a Rebbe for your children. Will be. For your own children, you're the Rebbe. You're a Shiva for your own family. For sure, you're that too. Every one of you is supposed to become that. Who here can say they're ready now? You're a Shiva of their family. They're not having a family yet, it's true. But they're on a path right now that if they continue as their plans are right now, they will be the Rosh Shiva. They will be their child's Rebbe as well. Who can say that? But it's Kai Isman. Baby. What am I going to do? I'm supposed to rise above? It's not fair. So what, if you know Kai Isman is, it's the end of something. It's the end of a year. I have a student of mine who last night was his father who passed, his stepfather passed away. It's not social because social was broken by Pesach, but it's the 30 day since he passed away. And I said to him before we started our share at nighttime, "Could you share with us something about his stepfather?" At the end of his life, he said to me, he was very traditional. He actually served the Israeli army himself, the stepfather. Very traditional person. But as he got on in years, he started to change. And he started to learn Derech Hashem. Nefesh HaChaim. But he realized it was too little too late. So he took a speed reading class. So he could read more. He started to go to Minyan 40 minutes in advance so he wouldn't miss anything as he's going through his own kayatzman of his life. The ending of his life. And the day before he died, when he could barely get up, and his son said to him, against his mother's suggestion, "Do you want to put tefillin on today, Dad?" He said, "I do." He couldn't even move. He said, "But please help me sit up." I put him while I'm sitting, I'm now lying down. He would have every excuse in the book to say, "I can't, I'm just too tired. It's been a long run, I tried, it's over, it's like finished." He learned how to speed read so he could read more because time was almost over. Can you imagine someone who looks at Kai Isman as like, it's already over? It's time to go about and act like I'm back, like I'm in college right now? To act like a regular person anywhere else in the world? Who would do that? This guy over here in the back of my shirt, he's not because he's sitting by the pool, because he just chafed the Tosfos. Yes! Yes, I got it! You think this guy over here would want to act that way if he was chilling by the beach? No, that wouldn't be this guy. He'd be like crying, what am I doing here? Why do I think that my kaitma, my end of my journey in this stage of life should be spent there? I could do it anywhere in the world, I want to do that. I do it at any stage of my life. I want it now at the end of a yeshiva experience. This stepfather, my student, taught him and me that when it's almost over is the time when you make those boxes. When you squeeze every last piece that you can, you don't take it easier. It's completely the opposite. This is the end of a part of your life. You want to act like you're in college already? Like you're in spring break? So then go to college. Go now. Maybe you can find a place to go for your mezman. There's nothing to see here. That's not what happens here. You want to do that, so then go somewhere else. Go home. There's plenty of beaches all over the world. Go to a different beach. Go to a beach that we celebrate, that we have today, that we can be here today, where we could travel an hour and a half away and go to the base, and maybe there's just a beach. You want to go to a beach there? I'd rather you go home. You can quote me on that. You can go home. go back to your parents and tell them, I want to go to the beach, so I went home instead of being in yeshiva. My rebbe told me I should. You can quote me on that. I'm happy to your parents if that's what the question about what I'm saying to you right now. And by the way, people who aren't here right now, you can share with them these words as well. The Gruss says, din v'cheshbon. You know what din v'cheshbon means? A din means something you do, so you have held accountable for what you did wrong right now. Cheshbon is what else you could have been doing right now had you not done that thing. You speak Lashon Hara in the basic metaphor you learn in Torah. You have a din on Lashon Hara and a cheshbon that's a calculation. What could you have done otherwise? Where else could you have been right now had you not been there? So you're punished for that and you're double whammied. Where would you have been had you not gone there? Everything you do has a din and a cheshbon. Do you have any good business? First of all, how'd you do? Did you invest in the right stocks? How much you gain, how much you lose? And what else could you have invested in had you been a better investor? And both those are held accountable over your head in the land of days. Both of them are. Din, v'cheshbon. I cannot imagine a bigger cheshbon than Kaitzman. I can't imagine a bigger one. Because for those of you who are not coming back into the year, those of you who are as well, this is the last chance you might ever get to be in yeshiva with your Rebbeim who are looking after your best interests. And you want to go away from that world? You want to go to a world that's a lav kedoshim to you? What are you doing for? Why are you doing that here? Go somewhere else and do it. You're going to be held accountable worse by being here. It's worse for you to be here. Or be a kadosh. Understand that everything you do in the world is for one reason, reason only, to get close to God. That's it. There's nothing else that matters. Nothing else. Not, it's also something. It's the only thing in the world that matters. I'm a sports fan, as many of you know. So, 1983, New York Islanders played against the Edmonton Oilers in the Stanley Cup. The Islanders were a dynasty at the time. The Oilers, in the end, got swept 4-0. They were one of the best teams, and they didn't stand a chance. So Wayne Gretzky, Mark Messier, Paul Coffey, and the Edmonton Oilers, they learned a great lesson in their Stanley Cup setback. Kevin Lowe said it best in his biography when he and Gretzky were shocked as they walked by the Islanders' dressing room on the way out of the rink. The Islanders were not in the midst of a grand celebration, but rather busy attending to their numerous bumps and bruises. Lowe said that they realized then that what it took to be champions. They couldn't get off the training table that year, the Islanders, when they won. They couldn't move. They spent every last bit they had trying to win, and then they left. When it was over, they couldn't move. That's what Kaitzman is. It's when every last bit you have, you give. There is no going back to the room afterward and taking a nap. Taking a nap? Why? What are you, 85 years old? Give me a break. Say the basic address. You want to put your head down in the seat? Put your head down. How's it going to nudge you? And then later on, I take a nap. You'll have plenty of naps you'll take later on. This is not nap time. It's not. Yeah, this is one time you squeeze. Every day you should pass out in your bed because you've exhausted every last bit of energy, knowing this is the last chance that you might have, potentially for some of you forever, to be in the yeshiva setting with your Rebbeim around, want nothing more than to help you out. For those who are unfortunate not to be able to come back, chaval that you can't. Chavetz Chaim, I'm going to end with this point.
Candle.
And then the candle, thank you. Chavetz Chaim. One time he called Rav Schwab in to his office. As I told you, they were close. There, he was his Talmud of Chavetz Chaim Schwab. And he said, I'm a Kohen, and you're not. So that is a fact, but he wasn't sure what he was getting at. So he said, do you know why I'm a Kohen? Now, the obvious answer was because your father was. That's not what he was getting at, so he left the Chavetz Chaim to answer the question himself. He said, because generations ago, when we were all at Har Sinai, and a mistake was made. It was a call that came from Moshe Rabbeinu, Mi Lashem Eli. Who wants to come with me toward Hashem? Chavetz Chaim says, my ancestors answered that call, and yours didn't. And there'll be a time that comes, but it's eventually rebuilt soon, and I'll be allowed to walk to a certain part, and they'll tell you, you can't go past here anymore. Because my ancestors answered that call. He said, every single person in their life will have a call like that. Mi Lashem Eli. When you hear that call, he said, you better run and answer it.
The candles that day, I believe, meant the following thing. Maybe I'm a bad Rebbe. It could be I am. Maybe other Rebbeim are not like me. But after Pesach, every year, you kind of take a stock of who you have. These are my 15 guys in my shir right now. These three are like automatic pilot. They're doing beautifully. Call a vote to them. These other seven or eight, there's a lot to work with, and I'm going to get in their guts and see what I can do still before the year's up. But these four, I'll tell you that. Like, I give up. Mercy, uncle, I can't. Had I picked two candles of my six that would never have made it, it would have been those. I never would have made it out. They were out the night beforehand. But I came back the next morning and they were the only ones lit. You have no idea who's going to make it in the end. You have no idea. Neither do we. And that day I promised myself, I'm never going to give up on a student. Who knows who's that guy? You might think, I'm not. Right? You have this, you know, beautiful shirt. And it's just, it's cute. It is cute. I think it's cute also. As long as you're wearing the basic matters and you learn with it on. It's cute. But you're all going to hear a call one day. And if you don't answer that call, then it's over. And your candle doesn't go back afterwards. But your Rebbeim will never give up on you. Never give up on you. Every single Rebbe is here until you leave. They don't want to come and speak to nobody in a classroom. They don't want to fight with you in the basement. They just, because you want to look up at some sports score. It's not now. It's not now. This is Kaisman, baby. This is time for us to squeeze every last piece that we have left. So when we go and the year's over, we work on our speed reading techniques. We did everything we could do to stock us in so we know Kedoshim to you applied by me in my yeshiva. I give you all a bracha. You should never go out as candles, first of all. If you do, God forbid, if you feel that way about yourself, you should relight yourselves. You should be zocha to constantly be thinking about yourself, what will bring me to that point in my life that will make me what I'm here for? The Chavos of Talmidim, the Rebbe will say about me that Hashem was happy he planted this sapling that is me. Hashem, which is Zoch as a yeshiva and as individuals, to continue the process that we started, have a beautiful Kaisman, baby.